The views and opinions expressed by the guests, callers, and hosts on this and all Rents Radio Network programs do not necessarily reflect or agree with those of the network, its commercial sponsors, its radio station affiliates, or internet broadcast platforms. In these controversial times, we believe the First Amendment and freedom of the press are absolutely essential to the survival of our nation. Thank you. And now, enjoy the program.
Another Friday is here already. Hard to believe the week is gone. Takes about 2 days, and then we're there, weekend. We have a great guest this first hour tonight, and I look at this situation as we are currently at war on this planet. The planet is under siege. It is besieged, and it may go down in flames. I don't know at this point. It's a very difficult thing to analyze, to assess. At the top of the doctors who are leading all of us who care in a fight for knowledge, for the ability to reach out and connect with our fellow human beings. That ability, by the way, has been, of course, all but taken away. As you know, we don't have access to the mainstream media. But Dr. Peter McCullough was the first person I saw on a video telling the truth about the horror we are facing. It has not gotten any better. In point of fact, Dr. McCullough's bravery has gotten him into some hellaciously difficult times. I can't even imagine dealing with what he's dealing with. What I'd like to do is just welcome him on and then play a little short clip, 60 seconds or thereabout. We have up on the site the two-part series, The COVID Testimony of Dr. Peter McCullough, Part 1, canceled for telling the truth. And no truer words were ever written than those, that's for sure. Dr. McCullough, thank you for being here. You're an incredibly busy man, and this is a very wise and well-informed audience, and they are going to listen very carefully to what you have to say. Thank you.
Well, I'm delighted to be here. Thanks for that wonderful introduction.
Oh, you bet. Now, let me play this. It's from part one of what I just mentioned. It's the video, and I just want to make a point with the first words that Dr. McCullough actually said. They're very telling here.
And happy as we'd all want to be, but I think the reason why everybody's here is we have a sense that something very bad is going on in the world, and I'm here to tell you I think it is, and something very bad is going on, and it's influencing all of us, each and every one of us, and it may have started a long time ago. I'm not an expert on this at all, and I know people are working on this, but somehow we've all been drawn into this, and it's affecting us, and I think we all have a sense of urgency that now's the time when things look relatively normal around us in terms of the bricks and mortar and our social structures and our employment. It's relatively normal now. And I think all of us have a sense it's not going to be normal soon with the pace that things are moving. So now's the time. Everyone's asking, what can they do? You can almost sense the tension in the emails and the texts. Since I sat down from the time April started talking, I got like 8 tense texts of people like, can you talk? I need something, this and that. You can sense this. And I think if you feel tension right now and you feel some emotional distress, and if you feel as if things aren't going right now, I think your perceptions are correct. And if your perceptions are correct, now's the time for action. So I'm going to jump into this.
Okay, let me stop right there. And I could spend several minutes reading the CV of Dr. Peter McCullough. I think most of you are well aware that he is absolutely brilliant in a number of different fields. And he has stood up. And I don't know why more doctors don't. And let me do this first, if I can, Dr. McCullough. I view the professional health industry in this country as being weeded out. About one-third of the employees, professionals, doctors, nurses, whatever, they're quitting. They're not going to bow to this outrageous, unconstitutional, illegal, immoral, horrific mandate. They're leaving. That'll leave about two-thirds. Now, the question is, and it's somewhat rhetorical, but maybe not, are the two-thirds who are still employed in the professional health industry in this country culpable, in your opinion? I can give my opinion. Culpable with leading some of these people to an early grave who go to them for relief? And I'm talking about remdesivir and other procedures that are completely, they're wrong. It's the wrong way to deal with this. We all know what's going on by now. But how do you look at the people who are staying behind for the paycheck, for the mortgage, for the kids, who are still dealing with people who are in the hospital, not because of COVID necessarily, they're in there because of the damn vaccine, which is not a vaccine. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, you hit on a lot of different things. Let's just talk about the vaccines. It's not a single vaccine. There's three products, and they're very different. They are all under emergency use authorization. This is a relatively new, untested legislation that allowed a product to go into public use before it was really fully ready to go into public use, where it was fully tested. These are under emergency use authorization. People don't buy vaccines. By the way, you can't buy a vaccine. You can't go in and say, listen, I want my insurance company to pay for this vaccine. They are offered under emergency use authorization. That's the first part that's unique. The consent forms are very clear. Everybody who's taken a vaccine, probably the majority of people listening to has taken a vaccine, you've read the consent form. Look at your consent form. It either says investigational or it says research on there. That's because it is under investigation. It's under research. So when a product is under research, this is very important. We have an Office of Human Research Protections in the United States. They have 6 cornerstones that they abide by. And I mean this. No doctor or any other family member, employer, or government agency, no one, under any circumstances, in any way, can provide any pressure, coercion, or threat of reprisal. That means as a doctor, following the rules, I can't encourage the vaccine. I never did encourage it. I can't. It's against the rules of the Office of Human Research Protections because it's under research. Just like if I had a research study, which I have, if I tell a patient, listen, you should really be in this study, I would actually be called as a violation. I cannot actually encourage my patients to be in research. I can make an offering. I can say, listen, this is here for you. These are the risks and benefits of participating in research. But we can actually not encourage research. And the other reason why we can't is because the second cornerstone is called the Declaration of Helsinki. The Declaration of Helsinki says that individuals must get full informed consent. That means as safety data accrue, these consent forms have to be updated. Do you know month by month these consent forms need to be updated with the safety data as it came through? Do you know they haven't been updated at all? There's no listing of the number of cases of myocarditis, the number of cases of permanent disability and death. That's actually not revealed in the FAQ or in the consent form. So we have a violation of the Declaration of Helsinki. Americans should be really alarmed that we don't have a safety report card. You know, I'm a doctor. I'm a pretty highly ranked doctor in the world in terms of my authority. And I'm telling you, my expectation of the public health agencies that report to me, and they report to you, by the way. They report to us. They are servants to us. They owed us a monthly report card. A monthly report card, bare minimum. How are the vaccines doing? Which ones are working? Where are the problems? Who's dying after the vaccine and why? We got to stop that. We can't have another person die after the vaccines. And who's being injured? How do we protect against this? That report card, listen, we've got report cards that come out in the auto industry. We get engineering report cards come out. We have report cards come out on consumer products. We have reports on the freshness of food in the grocery store.
Sure.
You better believe for a vaccine, we should have and actually demand safety report cards. You know, Americans haven't wanted to take a vaccine since April. Do you know these vaccine centers have been basically empty from April? They're mothballed. Mm-hmm. I drive past one every day. Mm-hmm. It has barricades up in front. It's got dust on it. Mm-hmm. People have not taken a vaccine in months because no report card.
I look at the vaccine. Now, please correct me if I'm wrong, but be kind. I view the vaccine as a bioweapon. I do not view it as a bioweapon that is being tested. I view it as a bioweapon that was planned, created, contrived, and has been deployed. That's how I look at it. How far off the mark do you think that is?
Well, I can tell you Dr. Peter Breggin and Ginger Breggin, who have written the book, and I wrote one of the introductions, COVID-19 and the Global Predators, We Are the Prey, that book would agree with you. Now, I can't render an opinion because I'm not Dr. Breggin. I haven't done the research he has, but he has over 1,000 references in there. It's very factual. You know, when lay people read the book, it's not to be a scientist to read it. It's laid out. If you want to see the connections between the U.S. government, the Chinese, Moderna, the Gates Foundation, Gavi,
it's all there.
It's all there. So it's all there, right? If anybody wants to get an idea of how interconnected this is, look at Scott Gottlieb, the former chairman of the FDA. He's on the board of Pfizer. What is he doing? Yeah. He comes on CNBC every morning. I see him. He's actually advising America on the vaccine. He's on the board of Pfizer. I can tell you board positions have financial stakes in them. I mean, look at the chairman of the FDA after him. That was Stephen Hahn. Stephen Hahn now works for the venture capital firm. That's the major financial source behind Moderna. Look at Moderna and the National Institutes of Health. They co-own the patent on the Moderna vaccine. Look at Rick Bright. Yeah, I mean, look, he was the one in the White House that effectively blocked hydroxychloroquine. Now he works for the Rockefeller Foundation. So this is in the open at this point in time.
Yeah. I want to say that I know Dr. Breggin. He's been on the program many times. I have nothing but the highest respect for him, and I'm aware of his book. This is not a trial. This is a planned release, and you know it, and I know it, and I'm not talking for you. I don't do that. But what are we going to do vis-a-vis getting to the people who, let's say the people who've already taken the shot? A lot of people want to write them off as gone. They're going to die. Many of them, unfortunately, probably will. But we have to reach out somehow to him. They have buyer's remorse, a lot of them. What do you tell people who come to you or reach out to you and say, my God, doctor, I've taken this shot. What do I do? What do I do? What kind of hope can we give these people?
I can tell you our CDC and FDA aren't telling these people anything. But I can tell you about 70% of my patients in my practice took the vaccines in December, January, February, some degree in March. And again, I don't, because I follow the rules. I'm a good doctor. I don't encourage the vaccines because I'm not supposed to. So they just took it on their own accord, but I'm following carefully, anticipating things. And I can tell you, we're now 9 months after a lot of my patients took the vaccine. If nothing happened in the first 30, 60, 90 days, I'm telling you, I don't think there's going to be any side effects. I am not predicting long-term doom and gloom. I'm not seeing the emergence of anything. So I think with a good news for people who took the vaccine. They did it out of patriotism. They didn't know if it was going to work. It's investigational. No harm, no foul. These were basically failed gene transfer technology platforms. You know, messenger RNA has been around a long time. There's a reason why it's not in widespread use. It doesn't work. It doesn't actually transform the body into making a protein permanently. They look like they were looking at monthly injections or every 3 month injections.
Sure,
now, if you start to get, if you start to get it every 3 months, it's no longer a vaccine. It becomes a genetic medicine. So I think one or two shots, nothing happened. No harm, no foul. As long as you don't take any more shots, I think those people are going to be fine. Obviously, for those who died and those who are injured, that's irretrievable at this point in time. We hope that that we can have some reparations for those people later on, because it's a huge number of people. What people are really facing right now is that, wait a minute, they're saying, listen, I'm being asked to take the vaccine. We already have 60% of Americans that took the vaccine. 80% of seniors took the vaccine. All the angst right now is on boosters, because people are saying, listen, I took the vaccine. I took the risk. We now know all these things are coming out. Do I really need to take a booster? And there, I think my comfort level starts to change, because there, the boosters need to be at least a year from one another to be a booster. When we start giving a second shot or a third shot, you know, 3 months later, 6 months later, that's actually medical therapy. That would be like getting, you know, an IV injection or a sub-Q injection of a medical therapy. Now we're looking at gene transfer technology given on a regular basis, a redosing of the genes and the genetic material that codes for the dangerous spike protein. So giving the body another stress test with spike protein every 3 or 6 months, I am very uncomfortable with that.
Well, it frightens the hell out of me even to hear it. They're saying now that the booster shot can be the same as the first dose, first round dose of Pfizer, Moderna, J&J. It doesn't matter. They're saying just take it. They're also saying take the flu vax at the same time you take your Pfizer. Same time in the pharmacy, at Walgreens, whatever, wherever you're going to get these things. It seems to me that they're saying the booster shot is no different whatsoever than any of the frontline Pfizer, Moderna, J&J, AstraZeneca shots. They're saying just take one. That's what the pharmacies are doing. So this is crazy to me. It's not even logical. There's no pretense that the booster is any different than the first round of a Pfizer shot.
You know, there's no medical prudence. I mean, would we just say, listen, you know, take any pill, just take this pill, mix and match all your pills?
Mix and match. That's right.
Yeah. Everybody knows that drugs and injections have an orderly procession. We know that one thing follows another. Listen, Moderna's 100 micrograms of messenger RNA. Pfizer's 30 micrograms of messenger RNA. For the small children, age 5 to 11, it's going to be 10 micrograms of messenger RNA. The Johnson & Johnson is adenoviral vector particles.
Right.
You know, unless we have very large randomized trials showing that we can cross over from one to another, we have absolutely no assurances that boosters are going to be safe. And we have lot of concern that mixing and matching is going to be grossly unsafe. I'll tell you another alarming observation. I was on the podium in Oklahoma, and a pharmacist came up to the microphone, and she started talking about how she feels uncomfortable with the vaccine. So it gave me a chance to ask somebody on the ground who works for a big chain. It's either CVS or Walgreens. There had to be 1,000 people in the room. And I wanted to ask her something. I said, have you been giving boosters to patients even before the boosters were approved? And she looked at everybody and she said, yes, because we were told to. Believe it or not, the hubris for vaccines and the lack of any regard for regulatory law, for approvals, as long as it's multiple needles in arms, as many shots as one can get, that seems to be okay from the big pharmacy chains, from the vaccine stakeholders. Look at mixing and matching. Really? This is extraordinary. Give other vaccines at the same time? The recklessness of the vaccine program.
There's no testing. There's nothing going on.
I've never said the word vaccine so much in my life. You know, I have a weekly radio show, the McCullough Report, America Out Loud Talk Radio, the McCullough Report. On the last show, I played a clip from a song, and the song has in the lyrics, vaccine. Since when do we have vaccines in the lyrics of contemporary songs? I mean, we have basically gone nuts over a vaccine that doesn't work well enough, and it's not safe enough. to have our entire world revolve around these vaccines.
It's never been tested, for God's sakes, and proven to be anything close to safe. There's no proof for any of it. And if they're giving this to children now, and I was told by somebody that they're going to give children, well, 10-year-olds, 12-year-olds, the same dose as a 25-year-old would get, same amount. I don't know if that's true, but that's what I'm hearing. All I'm getting is incredible insanity, chaos, and people following orders. Why? Because they're told to do it. And that goes back, let me circle back to what I said about the two-thirds of the professional health people. A lot of them are wonderful people. They're taking orders, and many of them damn well know that this is an extremely dangerous issue, and they shouldn't be playing with it. And I call them accomplices. If something happens to somebody because of what they did, they are indirectly an accomplice. Well, let's say it indirectly an accomplice. Anyway, it bothers me a great deal. The people in the health industry who have walked and not bowed to this mandate, which is utterly illegal on every ground you can imagine, are, in my view, heroes. They are the strong ones. So what do we do? Let's say we've got this laid out as Americans like sports analogies. The evil ones have put together a baseball game. We're one team. They're the other team. We got 9 innings. Where are we in the 9-inning game? Where are we?
I think we're top of the fourth, to tell you the truth. I'm predicting about 3 to 5 years, and we're 18 months into it. Why do I say that? Because there is a mass psychosis over this world, and it is the most comprehensive thing we've ever seen. This is more comprehensive than Nazism. This is more comprehensive than fascism. This is extraordinary. It is in the minds of people all over the world to be laser focused on a vaccine. And it doesn't even matter which one. Do you know in some parts of the world it's Sinovac? It's a killed virus vaccine, completely different than Johnson & Johnson, which is different
right.
than AstraZeneca, which is different than Pfizer and Moderna.
Right.
It doesn't
right.
even matter. It's a needle in every arm with some type of frequency to it. It's not like you get a needle in the arm and you're done for 20 years. No, the social contract is almost, it's almost, you get to live another month. So it's extraordinary. The lockstep and the mass psychosis is going to
yeah.
take a long time to unwind.
Let me add this, and I think this is very important. You said something that is obviously rock solid. The people on this planet have been beaten up for nearly 2 years now with unprecedented global fear. They have been beaten into a bloody pulp, and many of them are going to be suffering, I say, I'm no doctor, from PTSD for the rest of their lives. They're not going to get over this. They don't know what to do. They don't know who to believe. They're confused, they're scared, and when you boil this down to bare essentials, it's a fear-based, mass, mind-control, potential world genocide. Fear-based. So when you beat people up with fear, and then you have other people, well, I was told to do it, so I did it, just doing my job, you got a recipe for catastrophe. That's how I see it.
You know, I agree. I think initially the fear was astronomical. For the first time, doctors and nurses, there's a reason why the healthcare profession is so entranced on this, is that they were actually frozen in fear. And, you know, for the first time in my professional life, I was fearful I could die of the virus. And we started seeing sweep across from China
uh-huh.
to Italy. And the Italians, we were communicating with them. You know, they posted over 1,000 doctors who died in Italy of COVID-19. They were trying to take care of patients, a lot of the older doctors. The older American doctors became frozen in fear. Do you know there's still major conferences in medicine now? They're still afraid to meet. The doctors are afraid to meet. They are still
wow.
trying to do things by WebEx. Grand Rounds is still by WebEx. The lifeblood of medicine is doctors talking to each other because we can never agree on anything. We're constantly meeting, going on rounds, meeting in groups.
Mm-hmm.
Everything's in a team. So we don't see any teams of doctors anymore because we don't talk anymore. On TV, there's no teams of doctors. We have one or two who basically get positioned on TV. You know, I'm a frequent commentator on national TV. I love it
sure.
when I come on with another doctor. I love it.
Sure.
I mean, I'm on a regular contributor of Fox News. Let's get some interchange of ideas. It's critical. This is the lifeblood. I guarantee if people started talking in a roundtable, where no one was right or wrong, and we just exchanged ideas, we could pretty quickly get back on track. But we are not, because of the fear of the virus.
The controllers don't want you talking to each other, especially in front of the massive American public on the mainstream media. They don't want that. They don't want actual questions asked that are a little bit dodgy. Huh? This is not a vaccine by any measure. Is it a vaccine by any measure? Let me just ask you directly. Is this a vaccine by any normal measure of medical competence?
The idea that we would give an injection and then we would have the genetic material take over a mosaic of cells in our body and then have our body produce, express on the cell surface and circulate a known dangerous and lethal protein is an idea that's going to go down in human history as being flat out diabolical. It's a diabolical idea.
Sure,
I mean, it is basically harnessing our cellular machinery to produce something harmful with the hope that we would form immunity to it. What a stress test. Can you imagine the next poor senior citizen that's barely hanging in there and they get the stress test of this vaccine? Do you know in the analysis by McLachlan et al, that actually basically got the U.S. data, do you know who's dying after the vaccine? Our seniors, the very people we were trying to protect. There is a very strong age gradient of who's dying after the vaccine, and it's our seniors. No wonder they can't tolerate the stress test of the spike protein being produced in a large number of cells and letting it circulate, damage the blood vessels, and cause blood clotting.
This array of catastrophic, I hate the term side effects, because these are main head-on effects. They're just disastrous effects. Is getting to be almost as broad as it... It's much more broad than I thought in the beginning. I figured there's one or two things going on. As you look at this, Dr. McCullough, how many different pathways are there for severe, if not terminal, results from what this so-called vaccine, I'm going to call it a bioweapon because I know that's what it is. How many different pathways are there for people to run into terminal, critical, mortal trouble from this thing?
Well, the vaccine, it happens pretty quick. So the McLachlan analysis from Queens in London and then the Rose analysis in the American Journal of Public Health Policy and Law. And one of the reasons I cite the literature is I want people to actually check it out themselves. I know fact checkers are listening to me very carefully, and I want the fact checkers to amplify these papers because they're a very important source of information. What they've taken the VAERS data, and what they've shown is the deaths happen fast. And they happen in our seniors. Now, about half the deaths occur 48 hours from the shot. I mean, it's about as lethal as you can get. And then 80% of the deaths occur within a week. That's where almost all the action is. Now, 86% of the time, there's no other explanation. People walk into a vaccine center and
none,
they die.
None. That's
now,
right.
In the nursing home studies, there's several. One, I believe, is Kirkendall. I need to actually check that citation. When they reviewed the charts, and the two doctors reviewed the charts, and they tried to go through everything, they found about a 40% direct causality. But I'll tell you, 40%, 5% would be too much. Do you know our regulatory agencies, for a typical drug, if there's 5 unexplained deaths, black box warning, says warning, product can cause death. 50 unexplained deaths for a widely used product, let's say a product used by 50 million Americans or something like this. We're talking about 50 unexplained deaths, gone, off the market. I was on a safety review for a product called Omantus. Omantus was a new drug to be used in dialysis patients. It was used in about, I think, a couple hundred thousand dialysis patients, 60 deaths, gone off the market. In the United States, we hit the threshold to pull these vaccines off the market January 22nd. January 22nd, we had 182 deaths. That was beyond the limit of 150. That was the limit everybody had in their mind. Listen, if we pass 150, that's what we can tolerate in vaccinating the country, because that's what we see across all the vaccines, 278 million shots. 150 was the line. You know, with the swine flu, it was 25 deaths in 1976. It rose to 53. That was the line. That's with 55 million people vaccinated. So here we had 27 million people vaccinated January 22nd. We're already at 182 deaths. America was screaming, where's the Data Safety Monitoring Board? Where's the oversight panel? Where's the experts like Dr. McCullough who do this as part of their academic careers, who's safeguarding American lives? Answer, nobody. There's no data safety monitoring board, no clinical event committee, no human ethics board. And at 182 deaths, they keep plugging along. People keep taking the vaccine, keep taking the vaccine. Now, in March, we're up to 1,200 deaths. And the CDC puts on their website a one-sentence announcement that CDC and FDA doctors have reviewed the deaths, and none of the deaths were due to the vaccine. My jaw dropped. Do you know how long it takes to review deaths, review all the hospital records, the labs, get the source documents, make phone calls, get the death certificates? There's no way that there aren't doctors even qualified. Yeah, there's no doctors in these agencies even qualified to do the review. And not only that, they're sponsors of the program. The sponsors of the program are never the people who make the determination on death. It's always an unbiased external panel. It's like a ref in a football game. The ref doesn't play on one of the teams. It has to be an unbiased person. So the bottom line is there not, it wasn't a credible adjudication. Then the CDC and FDA came out in June at about 5,000 deaths and said the same thing. And I'm told they just came out again this fall and said the same thing. Not even the deaths where people are dying in the vaccine centers and they're doing CPR right there.
You know, within minutes, minutes of getting injected. Within minutes. I've seen it. So, just horrible.
Yeah, so Americans, basically at this point in time, they simply don't believe it. And, you know, there was an informal survey that was done on the Internet. Someone filled out a survey. Do you know somebody or somebody in your circles who's died of the vaccine? Answer a few months ago, 12%. Well, let me tell you, 12% of Americans is enough. People talk.
That's a lot.
And every single person in America knows you can die of the COVID vaccine. Everybody knows. And that's the reason why the vaccine centers are empty. I actually was preparing for some review, and I just logged into the Harris County Vaccine Center down in Houston, and I wanted to see how they were doing. Do you know every single time slot that they had scheduled a few months ago was empty? Every single one. At least in the day I looked, there were zero takers in the fourth largest metro area in the United States. I am telling you, the word is out. And that's the reason why people are protesting. We've never protested vaccines before. Do you know we require the meningococcal vaccine for college? 20 million people take the meningococcal vaccine. I've never seen a protest. Never. I'm a cardiologist, internist. I take the hepatitis B vaccine. I take the influenza vaccine. I've never seen a hepatitis B vaccine protest outside of a hospital. Never. Never heard of it. Now, I'll tell you, I can tell you why there's COVID vaccine protests. And why people are walking off the job. They know they can die of the vaccine. It's that plain and simple. People are saying, listen, I don't want to risk my life with the vaccine. And that's the reason why they're walking off the job. Our federal officials ought to pay attention to that response.
We have no government left, Dr. McCullough. And I'm speaking for myself here. This is not a government of, by, and for anybody but the international elite. That's who the government is for. They don't give a damn about us. And all you got to do is look at the real statistics, if we could ever get them, and we see that loud and clear. We already do. VAERS statistics. It is said by some you should multiply their numbers by 99, and you might be close. So where does that put VAERS? Where does that put the FDA, the CDC? These organizations just do not. They are not serving humankind. They are not serving Americans. And this is worldwide. This is not just here. Americans can't see it, the impact around the world. It is catastrophic. So,
I was asked a comment on Chris Saucedo today. Where they
on what?
Played a clip
what?
On Chris Saucedo on Newsmax, and where they played a clip from Taiwan. And in places where COVID is pretty low incidence and prevalence right now,
right?
In Taiwan, there's more vaccine deaths than there are COVID deaths. And the same is true in Australia. When you get COVID down low enough, people start, there's greater numbers of deaths with the vaccine. Remember, former President Trump said, listen, let's not make the cure worse than the disease. Well, the example of the vaccine is actually in an analysis by Kostoff, and he looked at the data very carefully, published it in Toxicology Reports. One is more likely to die of the vaccine than take your chances with COVID and die of COVID. And it doesn't even factor in early treatment that can save almost everybody. And then the same thing by Tracy Hogue, University of California, Davis, has published. A young person is more likely to be hospitalized with myocarditis, of which we now have well over 6,000 cases of myocarditis. 86% of these young people have to be hospitalized. You're more likely to end up in the hospital with myocarditis than end up in the hospital with COVID. So the intelligent choice is to skip the vaccine. So when people say, there's somebody's unvaccinated and they're hospitalized, you're like, yeah, they took a smart choice.
That's something we used to have a constitution that would guarantee for us. Look, here's the deal. When I hear somebody announced as having been diagnosed with COVID, what does that tell me? I'm not speaking for anyone else but me. There is no test that's viable and valid for COVID. And these people are in the hospital. Some 95%, 90% have been double vaxxed. So they're in the hospital. They're being diagnosed with COVID. What the hell is COVID? And they've got no test for it, admittedly by the CDC. So these people are obviously in there suffering from the effects of the vaccine, the bioweapon. My word, bioweapon. They're in there not from COVID. Have you ever really run across a case of COVID that you can point to a hardcore science data and say, that's what you have, it's right there, that's the virus? Have you seen that?
Yeah, I can tell you. I take a different view. I've had losses in my family. I've had the virus myself. I had it too,
Dr. McCullough. So just so you know, whatever it is.
I'm just saying that I have a viewpoint that it's real. And this is about people's viewpoints. I could be accused of misinformation, but I have a belief that it's real. And that, like all viruses, we don't isolate viruses. They're too small to isolate. There's basically one characterizes what they see with the virus, and then they transfer fluids and infect other cells and look at patterns and then do forms of sequencing to identify what they believe is the virus. So, people have said, well, the virus has never been isolated. It's like one of these trick questions. It's like, how can you prove the sky is really blue? But I'll point you to a report for those who want to say the virus wasn't isolated. Paper by Caldas, C-A-L-D-A-S, Caldas and colleagues, published in Scientific Reports, Nature Research, high quality journal. The title of the paper is Ultrastructural Analysis of SARS-CoV-2 Interactions with Host Cells Using High Resolution Scanning Electron Microscopy. They basically fundamentally show the virus invading cells. People who had COVID-19 invades the cells and has a characteristic pattern. Let me tell you what, this virus in human beings causes blood clotting. I mean, it's the only virus I've ever seen in my career that causes blood clotting. That's how people die. The autopsies that exist and people who die of COVID-19, they uniformly show the lungs filling up with blood clots. It's a real disease. It occurs from a real virus.
Are they testing for spike protein? Or are they just testing for the virus?
Perfect landscape for testing. Let's just cover testing real quick. The initial polymerase chain reaction PCR test using CDC methodology, which became the laboratory-derived platforms for all the hospitals in the United States, could not distinguish between influenza and COVID-19. The CDC, long afterwards, came out with a recognition of that. But, we quickly moved on. We had Roche, LabCorp, Abbott, we had all kinds of mature big lab companies that use their own methodologies, and they also make influenza tests, and they can clearly distinguish the two. So that became a non-issue. I think there were some seniors who had flu that were misdiagnosed as COVID. I think that did happen. But you can be assured, someone who has a test with a conventional assay right now, and it's readily verifiable. We can turn around and do an antigen test and test for the nucleocapsid, and we should be doing verified testing. I do it a lot in my practice, PCR and antigen. I want to make sure they really have COVID-19 because I don't want to have a false positive. So when someone has the characteristic syndrome, we see lymphocyte depression, we see a high C-reactive protein, we see a high D-dimer, I can tell you this is the real infection. It is a real syndrome, and it does exist. Now, when people are dying, what the CDC tells us, and it's my experience, at about 10% of the deaths, there's nothing else that can be explained except for it's COVID. There was no other contributing factor. They died of COVID. 90% of the time, there's a contributing factor. So here's the opportunity. People who are really healthy, they're largely going to do pretty well. But it's the vulnerable people, are people with heart failure, emphysema, blood disorders, prior cancer. Those are the ones where COVID strikes and can be fatal. And so diabetes, I think we do need to protect diabetes, obesity. We need to protect these vulnerable people. But it is a real virus. It's a real syndrome. I always point out, you know, I've been on some calls right now where people say, aha, the virus doesn't exist. I said, listen, the virus doesn't exist. What are we doing?
No, I've never said that. I'm one who says the test. I've watched all of Kerry Mullis's videos. I understand the story about PCR. I understand the antigen. I'm suspicious that it's not so much the virus, but after the virus gets in, the spike protein gets loose, and that's what does most of the damage. The clot damage, it blocks it all up.
Well, listen, that's an interesting point. There have been studies now where just purely the spike protein is given to animals, and it's clearly pathogenic. Right. So
thank you.
And we know from one paper from Ogata and colleagues from Harvard, where they were actually, with an innovative assay, able to measure spike protein in the plasma of humans who took the vaccine. Mm-hmm. But what we know in the natural infection is probably the spike protein does not freely circulate. It's probably always attached to the nucleocapsid. At least it has a free circulation of the spike protein has not been described in the respiratory infection. We do know the Chinese have told us that the virus does go everywhere in the body, and it comes out in sweat, it comes out in urine and feces. In fact, that's how you can test it. The Chinese quickly moved to anal swabs, by the way. You know, we're still sticking the swab way up our nose. That's crazy. They're using anal swabs where it's readily recoverable. That's where we do the sequencing, by the way. The virus comes out intact in the GI tract. It's not intact up in the nose. It's very hard to sequence up in the nose. Hmm. But you sequence from the GI tract and stool. But at any rate, the point is a paper by Bruce Patterson at the Rome Summit in September really opened my eyes, where he found 15 months later, the body is still clearing out the spike protein. He was able to find the S1 segment of the spike protein. Spike protein just has two segments, by the way, S1, which is the outer part of the spine, and S2, the one that connects to the ball of virus. He was able to find the S1 segment in human monocytes 15 months after the respiratory infection.
That's a shock. That's a long haul. That's wild.
Well, you named it. Actually, you named it. That's what Patterson said at the meeting. He goes, no wonder people have long haul syndrome. Can you imagine having this foreign protein that causes disease and destruction in tissues, having it in your body for 15 months? That was the outer limit. Now, obviously, some people must clear it out sooner, but we use macrophages and monocytes. They're the kind of garbage trucks of the body. They clear out substances of the body. Can you imagine your body clearing out that stuff for 15 months after a respiratory infection? No wonder people lose weight. No wonder there's long hauler syndrome. And the worrisome thing is, how long does it stay in the body after the vaccine? Because the vaccine is thought to be even a bigger dose of spike protein. Why do I say that? Because the antibodies after the vaccine to the spike protein are way bigger than the respiratory infection. So I am postulating that the spike protein exposure after a dose of the vaccine is way bigger than you get with the respiratory infection.
Does the bioweapon succeed in converting the body's cells by jiggling the DNA into making the cells create spike protein? Is that a fact? Are you comfortable with that? Does that work? Or is the vaccine a complete failure? And it doesn't do that. What are your thoughts?
Okay. So messenger RNA, let's just take Pfizer and Moderna. This is easier to conceptualize. So the messenger RNA is taken up by little packets into cells, and the cells actually begin to handle the messenger RNA and interacts with transfer RNA, which starts to actually pair up amino acids onto the base pairs of the messenger RNA. The Pfizer Moderna products have what's called 3' and 5' nucleoside caps. These caps are synthetic. They're not natural caps, and they keep that messenger RNA stable. Now, a normal piece of messenger RNA in your body, so right now as we talk, your body is making a ton of messenger RNA. You actually make the messenger RNA off your DNA. It goes out into the cytoplasm, and it's out there just for a second or two as it assembles some amino acids into a polypeptide, and then it dissolves by RNAases. The natural RNA is a one-use, rapidly dissolvable substance. The Pfizer and Moderna, because of these nucleoside caps, and in a paper by Kariakalis and colleagues, there are two papers now, you can find them because I'm an author as well, he's doing wonderful work from Athens, Greece, molecular biologist, has shown that these nucleoside nucleoside caps maintain an extraordinary stability of the messenger RNA. That's the reason why it can produce so much spike protein for so long, because it's not dissolved. You know, people originally had the conception, at least I did, that these vaccines would go in the arm, they would literally produce some spike protein in the arm for a day or two, you get immunity, and you're done. It'd be like a tetanus shot. No way. When the Ogata paper broke, and Ogata found circulating spike protein for 2 weeks, mm-hmm. Now, that's after the first shot of Pfizer Moderna. Now, after the second shot, the spike protein is dampened down probably by the antibodies, but invariably it's still produced in tissues. It's still produced within cells, expressed on the cell surface. The body is making an attack, an immune attack against its own cells, because the cells are expressing the spike protein on its surface. That's very abnormal. We only express natural human proteins on our cell surface. We have what's called the major histocompatibility complex on the surface, MHC. You know, to express a Wuhan lab spike protein on the cell surface of our cells is very abnormal, and the body must go into an absolute immunologic rage when this happens.
Wow. All right. One more question. Dr. Bhakti urged everybody who lived through the first two doses, take your pick, to make sure that they have their wills drawn up before taking a third or a fourth jab, i.e. a booster jab. How dangerous, now that we know that they're actually giving the first and second shots as a booster, there's no difference. So how many times can you keep dosing yourself with catastrophe before you're gonna end up at the morgue? This isn't gonna work. These people should not be taking boosters, should they?
I have a different view. And it's just that I don't think it's doom and gloom for those who took a couple shots, mainly because these are failed gene technology transfer programs. The body must be pretty darn robust in knocking out these injections so they don't cause long-term harm. Because we've had basically 60% of Americans take these vaccines. I think we're now 9 months into the program. I think if horrible things were coming our way, like cancer, like dementia, like heart failure, I think we would have started to see the signals. Everything we're seeing in the analyses from the safety database is that it's all tightly related to the immediate action of the high concentration of spike protein production within the first few days. I'm very hopeful. Am I watching mm-hmm. carefully? Yes. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Is it possible? Not only that, but think about it. You know, 100 micrograms of messenger RNA, that's the biggest dose we get with Moderna. That means it's a tiny number of cells that have been impacted by this. The mosaic of cells is very small. We're not peppering. It's not like chemotherapy where you're basically carpet bombing the entire body. But here's the thing. If you gave an injection at one time point, a month later you gave another one, now in another 3 months, if people start to get on a three-month schedule, and the design of the gene transfer technology, and again, these have been around for decades, was to give mm-hmm. injections about once a month or once every 3 months. If mm-hmm. we get to once every 3 months injections, that's not a vaccine. That's a medicine. We're giving a medicine to the body
Absolutely.
Every 3 months.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and it's,
sure.
Yeah, so if we get to medicinal levels of dosing, you know, in Israel, I'm told that if one doesn't take the booster, they're now considered unvaccinated. So now you're back to square one.
That's right. That's right.
You know, people have said, Dr. McCullough, I have to take a vaccine to keep my job at work. I asked them, what's the social contract? Are you getting 3 months more of employment? You better figure out what you're getting for taking that vaccine. You know, people say, I didn't think about that. Is it 3 months or 6 months?
People
How much more work are you getting?
They're not thinking, Dr. McCullough. All right, let me just ask you this last question. You have paid and are paying a terrible price for standing up for all of us, and I mean worldwide. How is it at this point? Are you getting any relief, or are they doubling down on you?
You know, I got to tell you what, I've told many that I could not sit back and watch my patients, my family members, and my friends get slaughtered by the virus. I can't do it. I don't have it in my ethical or moral or clinical DNA to do that. I took an oath to help people.
Understood.
I can't do that, okay? I just can't do it. And because I have a lot of scientific and clinical authority, I may have as much authority as anybody in the world right now.
That's true.
I took action into my own hands, and I taught the world how to treat COVID-19 and prevent hospitalization and death. I did it with a great team. And I got the paper over to Finish Line, American Journal of Medicine, August 2020. It'll probably go down in history as one of the most seminal papers of all time. No one could get something across the finish line in our corrupted medical literature, which got corrupted very quickly. But that paper went viral. I knew something was going on. I got calls from the White House. I got calls from the U.S. Senate. You know, I've been asked for my opinion by the Federal Reserve, by the NFL, the NHL, by companies.
Yeah.
I mean, I have to tell you, you know, if I was not of any interest in the world, the phone wouldn't be ringing off the hook. You wouldn't be talking to me. You're talking to me for a reason. You know, when I had my interview with Tucker Carlson, I was very nervous. I didn't know how much to really disclose to America, and there was no practice. You know, I just showed up there. I walked in the studio. I met Tucker. We sat down. He started talking to me. He started getting really worked up. And at one point, in the middle of the interview, he looked over at the camera. He goes, listen, if you don't know who this doctor is, you better go find out. Go look him up. He's Peter McCullough, and he's got authority. And he realized the reason why I have authority is that in a single person, I have published more. I have interpreted more data. I've published more on COVID-19. I've had the illness myself. Yeah. I have treated more patients. In a single person, I have that combined clinical, scientific, ethical, moral, and clinical authority.
Well, we need you. Stay well and stay safe. And thank you for making this hour available. You have a lot of people listening to you, and they really appreciate you. Thank you, Dr. McCullough, very much.
Thanks for having me.
Okay, good night. All right, we could have talked about a whole lot more, but an hour is an hour. We will be back in just a few. Hang on.